Guus, good morning, and again, welcome back to the Netherlands.
Hey, man. Yeah, I'm back again. I just keep on coming home.
Yeah, so both of us took a very short trip to the U.S. We were there only for a couple days to do some presentations, and we flew back, and I literally forgot you in the airport. We were sitting in different seats. I got out of the plane, and I was so excited to be home, and I rushed home. And when I was walking outside of my house, I realized, like an hour later, oh crap, I left Guus at the airport, and I told you I'd meet you at baggage claim. So I'm very sorry for that.
It's because we flew in this 1980s style airplane with the purple remotes in the armrests.
So my TV didn't even work. Our entire row had no TV for whatever it was, a 9 or 10 hour flight. And there was not any central TV. There was just nothing. There was no plugs, so you couldn't use your computer. You just sat there. Was it freezing in the back?
No, it was fine.
Oh, God, it was so cold. I don't know if I was in the air conditioning area, but man.
Aren't you lucky you have gold status? Huh.
Yeah, that helped a lot. So it's a beautiful day to talk about privacy, especially given all the... all the sort of U.S. congressional hearings and GDPR, one of our favorite topics coming up. But specifically, this morning, and I think what was so interesting, is I opened up Facebook to receive my first message on Cambridge Analytica.
You sound almost like a senator.
So there's a pop-up. It doesn't tell me if I was specifically targeted. It just simply says, with the header, protecting your information, we understand the importance of keeping your data safe. We have banned the app. This is your digital life, which one of your friends, here we go. So one of my friends, I skimmed through this, logged into using Facebook. We did this because the app may have misused Facebook information, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. There's more work to do, but we are committed to confronting abuse and putting you in control of your privacy. So I guess one of my friends used it. Mm-hmm. I guess they have my information now. I don't remember being targeted with any specific political ads, but I also block my news feed. So yeah, there's that. And it seemed like a good time to talk about the impossible design of privacy.
Yeah. Also with the upcoming new regulations, which we talk about a lot, the GDPR here in Europe, of course.
So Guus, you're fairly, what's the word I'm looking for? Paranoid. I'm slightly less paranoid, but still up there. I've just sort of given up. But why is designing for privacy so hard? Or the communication of privacy or anything around privacy? What's going on here?
I think your quote applies, right? Give me convenience or give me death. People will always sacrifice security for extra convenience. And I think privacy is something that needs protection. And that's one side of it. You need to actively make sure that you protect it or that you know where all of your stuff is. And I think the other problem is that privacy and the internet is a long-term issue, and we like to reap short-term benefits and not think about long-term issues.
It just seems like there's something along the lines of this Uber conversation of whose responsibility is it? Because all I hear about, and Guus, you and I were both in the airport on, when was it? What day is today? Today's Monday. Yeah. When were we in the airport? On
last week, Wednesday?
Last Tuesday? Wednesday? Tuesday.
Depends which country.
Tuesday is when we flew back. And both of us, we were watching the hearings, and there's this whole Uber question of, you know, whose responsibility is it? Is it the company's or is it the person's responsibility? And then everyone was sort of jumping on Facebook, oh, your privacy policy is complex. No privacy policy is easy. And coming from the U.S. government, which generally between their tax regulations and any other regulation has the most complex, you know, difficult documents to read, but it just felt like, you know, everyone gives these privacy statements in black and white, but they're all written by legal teams. So they're not clear. But why should somebody else be responsible for my privacy?
Well, I think the issue is, for me, when I look at it, it's Facebook's a publication platform where you publicize things that you want to talk about, things that you like, things that you see. So people telling Facebook to keep that private, it goes kind of counter to what they use the platform for. So that's my first issue with that. But what I think that people didn't realize while they were doing that and still don't care about, even now that they do realize, is that even giving a platform the simplest of tells, like I like this band and I like that yogurt drink, can categorize you with other people. Right? That's what the Cambridge Analytica thing did for people. It categorized them and then allowed a firm to really tailor advertisements to them, which is the basic premise of Facebook anyway.
So let's split that into two parts, because one, there's information that you put public, and then there's information that is collected about you. And I think those are two separate topics that people then mush all together, mm-hmm. right? Because one of them, the information that you put out there about you, to me, that's you should be responsible to that for that. But then there is the information that is being collected about you, like your location-based services, and they are using it to, you know, in theory, as you said, provide better convenience, provide better services, but they don't necessarily pull these apart when they explain a privacy policy. And then both you and I have worked on sort of opt-in and privacy statements, so is it impossible to make these things coherent?
What do you mean with coherent?
One of the biggest issues that's come up with GDPR in the EU, right, the General Data Protection Regulation, about how you treat people's personal information, and then this came up with multiple times with Facebook, and you see this with Apple, that privacy policies are constantly difficult to understand. They obfuscate language. So is it actually our designers, so let's bring it back to us here, are designers capable of making a privacy policy that's coherent that people will read?
I think designers should be capable, even according to the new GDPR law, because any reason that you need to save personal or sensitive data about people needs to be dumbed down in such a way that anybody can understand it quickly and take a decision if they agree or disagree with it, right? That's where the opt-in policies come from. They want to make sure that every point that you want to use personal data for is quickly understandable and people can weigh the pros and cons. So to me, it's not a question if we can, we will have to. And if we can't, that means we don't understand well enough what we're asking from the user.
So the next question, which I think is the more interesting one, is will people even stop to care? And this is my biggest problem. Right. This is there's a great. Do you know the meme where the guy's riding the bicycle and then he takes the stick and puts it in his own front tire and then falls off the bike?
I haven't seen that one.
Okay, so it's a three-panel meme. First one, you know, person's riding the bike. The second one, the guy takes a stick and sticks it in the front wheel of his own bike, and then the third one is him falling off the bike. And in this case, the meme was, you know, oh look, a social platform. I'm gonna put all my data on it. And then, of course, the guy falls off the bike and he's like, damn you, Mark. That's what it feels like. We do get privacy policies thrown up. I mean, even the one that I got this morning on we have banned this application, I immediately was like, oh, I'm going to take a screenshot of this only because of this podcast, and literally closed it without even reading the complete first sentence. And this is my issue, where people are upset with all these companies. And yet, I don't believe people are going to read anything, because they're like, well, there's this convenience. As you said, there's a convenience that you want to get to. So at what point, as designers, are we responsible for people not caring, for people's apathetic attitude towards this, and then their desire to complain after the fact, right? Is this something that we need to do with education? Is this something we need to do where it's like, no, we're going to force this up on your screen for 10 seconds before you're allowed to move on to the application? Like, is there a viable solution to this?
No, and I'm honestly worried about asking people for anything. They'll just say yes anyway. You see it all the time with the end user license agreements and the terms and conditions. People just say yes because they want to use the thing, and it's in the way of them using the thing at the moment you ask it. And of course, that's exactly where people are going to place it, at the moment where it's the least convenient for you to actually take a decision, because you kind of want to just get the thing that you're out to get.
Okay, so I think that's actually a really good point, which is all of these statements are never the core, let's say, customer journey, the core task that you are looking to do within an application, right? So these are always inconvenient. So then the question becomes, are they placed at the right point, right? They are placed as an interruption.
yep.
to whatever your core task is. And rather than an interruption, should they be placed in, you know, if you have an application that has a menu, let's just pretend the menu says, you know, about us and shopping, and then below that is privacy or something where you have this so front and center that you can go and look at it. But again, oftentimes people put these dialogues up or these notifications up because they have to, right? They're doing an application update. And if they do an application update and they say, hey, we added this whole new menu item called privacy, right? We considered a first-class citizen with whether we're doing shopping or services, whatever that is, you can go and do it. You're never going to go and do it anyway because it's not the point of the application. So these are inherently in your way at all times. And just to your point, people are just going to dismiss them. And this becomes that, I mean, what we started out the podcast with, this impossible scenario of designing for people's privacy, because as you mentioned, I'm not sure people care until after the fact. They don't care until something goes wrong.
Yeah, exactly. And they just become like ads. And we've all become insensitive to ads. They're everywhere. They're in YouTube, they're on the side of the websites and everywhere. But think about YouTube, where they come before the movie you want to play. You just sit through them. You don't try to refresh until they don't come up anymore, or you don't close the page because you don't want to see the ad. You sit through it. And in the same way, you're just going to say yes to whatever pops up because you just want to get to what you're doing. You don't care about the privacy settings of Uber. If it's not going to work nicely when you don't say yes, then you don't want it. Of course, there's a provision in GDPR that says you cannot refuse customers if they don't want to sort of surrender their private data, their personal data. But you will get a subpar experience and people will later on get annoyed into giving this permission anyway. And we shouldn't forget that what happened with Cambridge Analytica is that the first, what was it, 270,000 people were people who actually said yes to that app being able to do all kinds of things to their timeline and see their likes and whatever and who their friends were. The issue was that also people who were in the second ring of connection of the people who said yes, their data could be read. That's a mistake. But the first 270,000 people just said yes to something that they didn't know what it was or what it could do.
Okay, so then let me... Because one of the things when you just talked about having to opt in and you said, hey, they can see all these things. I actually think in the few times that I have used, I think it's called Facebook Connect, whatever their login platform is, right? You can use it on multiple applications. The few times I have used it, I have been quite impressed because applications can then serve you up and say, hey, this is the information we are going to use directly from Facebook. You know, please check or uncheck what you don't want to use. And if you take the time to go through it, it's actually pretty coherent and comprehensive in the times that I've used it. So I'm, you know, sometimes I get quite surprised when people are sitting there saying, no, this was never clear. It seems much clearer, but perhaps if that is a, to the point of getting back to design, if people force you, as GDPR is doing, to opt in, right? The problem that you just said is if I don't opt in, I could get a subpar experience. And then you blame the application, you don't blame the regulation, right? Mm-hmm. Because people won't even think about the regulation. They'll just see, I'm not opted in, I don't want to opt in, whatever, I don't even care to read this, so I'm just going to click OK, right? Or the application may throw up some banner that says, if you don't opt in, you will get a subpar experience, in which case you're going to opt in anyway. So either way, you're still going to, you know, sort of move forward with this. But maybe there is a situation from a design perspective that you need to more clearly force people to be reflective, that you don't let them move forward until they check something. But at the same time, how many times have all of us checked, I agree with the terms and services, and then completely never read them? So it's a difficult challenge on the design side. And I think people have to somehow have an education into caring about this, into taking a personal responsibility. There's only so much regulation will do, and regulation can maybe force companies to act ethically, but regulation can't necessarily force individuals to invest time and care and stop being apathetic towards this.
Yeah, what I find funny about what we're trying to argue about is that in a way we're saying that people should be careful what they opt into. And we want to design it in such a way that they know what they're doing. But don't we both feel that if they're opting into something that is actually not okay, why would we design it? Shouldn't we design it differently so they don't need to opt into anything for it to be a perfect experience?
Well, this comes to an ethical point of view, right? And that's also been, we've worked with several companies over the past year that have brought up ethical standards that they hold internally. And we've also seen that now with privacy around Apple and Tim Cook's response to Facebook, whether that's Facebook or Twitter, that do companies have a responsibility to act ethically? And if so, what specifically does that mean, right? And that's very subjective, sort of eye of the beholder. And GDPR is trying to, in my opinion, is trying to force that ethics onto people, right? It's trying to say you must declare more and you must make it understandable, because it feels like so many people were skirting around that ethical responsibility. And again, as I said previously, not making their privacy statements or their privacy language coherent. And therefore, yeah, people were never reading it. So it seems like this is regulation to try to make that coherent, try to make that legible for people. But to the point of the interruptions, are people still going to give the even 15 seconds to reading it?
But also, if you think about the whole line of business that creates services, right? You have all kinds of people. You have strategists, you have business people, you have developers, you have designers. This whole group of people, who is most likely to think about ethics? And that's the people who are closest to the user. So that should be the marketing and the designer guys, because they're the closest to the actual people. They're not looking at business processes. They're not looking at how it works or if they can get it to work. They're looking at how people will experience it, if that is something that they want in their lives. And I know there's a new role that came with the GDPR, or a new obligatory role for companies that work with large volumes of personal data, which is the data protection officer, but that's a legal role. And we've talked about this before. When you break the law and you go from the legal part to the illegal part, you've gone way too far. And if you want to keep the trust of the people, you need to stay below that ethical level. But a DPO, or a data protection officer, has no interest in finding out where that ethical level is, because they are just there to make sure that a company operates within the law. So who is going to figure out this ethical level?
No, I think that's actually a really good point, is that designers are probably in the best position to act as that ethical force within an application. It just so happens that I think you and I also view design a little different, right? It's not purely about behavior, but looking at the entire experience of how people think about a product and think about a brand, and therefore ethics is quite a clear part of that. Mm-hmm. Coming in, we're coming in about time here to wrap this up. And this is why we started out saying this is sort of an impossible task. It's part personal responsibility. I don't necessarily agree that with GDPR, I'm not sure that regulation is the way to go about this, but I do like that companies are being pushed to make things, make their privacy statements or the terms and conditions or whatever that is going to be about how they collect and use personal data in plain language and more coherent.
Yeah.
But as we both said, I'm not sure that's going to remedy the situations that we're seeing here. So it's something I, as a designer, I don't necessarily have an answer for at the moment. As you said, the ethical part, the part of maybe, forcing those decisions. You and I have both done privacy statements over the past year, and we know that they can be coherent, but they may still not be read. So I don't know. Are there any good lessons in the last, 20 minutes that you would take away from this?
Not per se lessons. I think the biggest change is not going to be on the opt-in side of things, which is what we discussed right now, like the trouble of getting people to realize what they're doing. I think the strength of the new privacy law will be in the fact that you can actually opt out at any time. It should be easy. And there's a right to be forgotten, meaning that you can have your data purged from any system. So at least all of the companies that use personal data that will use tricks to get you to opt in, you will have the ability to actually get out and erase it again, which is something very different than the world is nowadays.
I forgot we didn't even talk about the data portability aspect of GDPR, but perhaps we'll need to come back to this in a part two podcast or future podcast. There's so much to unpack here, and both you and I can think a little bit more about, what could we do if people come to us and ask us, how do we solve this?
So. Yep.
Well, good philosophical discussion to start our mornings off. Let's grab some coffee and start the day.
Okay. Bye, man.
Cool. Later, man. I gotta say, you know, as we were having that discussion, you said a lot of really nice things, and I'm just thinking, Jesus Christ, how do you solve this? Like, I was really thinking to myself during the conversation, man, don't worry, I'll come up with something by the end of this. And I was just like, I don't know what the f*** to say.
I hate that somehow us as designers always seem to think that designers are the only people who care about people. That's not really true, but I still think that this is a problem that needs to be solved by the designers, or at least the ethically inclined designers, because I really think there's an issue when a DPO does not care. If they don't break the law, the DPO has done their job.
No, but this was the whole thing when we talked to several podcasts ago, yeah. Where this whole idea of, is there a new role for an ethics, the problem with saying designer means so many things, but an ethics person, whether that's a researcher or designer that understands how behaviors and perception impact, you know, how people work with products.
You know, the thing is, the designers now finally have a seat on the table, but an ethics person will never just be hired unless it's necessary. And you cannot prove the necessity unless you've had a trust leak, you know? Unless people started to trust your brand less, and ethics becomes a way of repairing that, ethics does not get a seat at the table just because.
Ethics is also so subjective. I mean, in the situation, you and I both went out and bought coffee machines, and I bought a Nespresso one. And I know some people at work don't specifically like that because of the capsules, right? They feel it is unethical to use the capsules. And maybe unethical is you know, a strong word, but they don't like it because they feel like it is creating unnecessary waste, which they're not wrong, right? Uh-huh. I mean, you got a coffee machine that creates only compostable coffee ground waste.
Yep.
Yes, I am more lax in my ethics of coffee waste. I'm acceptable of that. But when it comes to companies, then it's thinking, what does this company culture stand for, right? What does – I have to put aside my personal ethics for company ethics, and then is that from the CEO? Is that from the culture? Like, that's such a hard role to fill.
But I just don't see a data ethics officer become real. Somehow, I don't see why a firm would pay for that unless they're in the doghouse, like – Facebook is right now, and other companies will soon be. Uber's been there, where they need to come up with a bunch of statements that will make people feel better. A bunch of excuses tied together with actions on how in the future they will make sure that they will behave better, you know?
No, so let me throw that back at you, because what you just said during the podcast with the idea that the DPO has this legal ceiling, but if you bring it down to in the diagram that you created, there's a legal ceiling, there's a acceptable ceiling, and there's an ethical ceiling, if I remember this correctly.
Yeah.
And so if you say that something like this creates and inspires trust within a company and can create a better experience, then this person could, in theory, have a measurable impact on business based on the, you know, perception of the brand and the trust of the brand. So therefore, you could make a business case for somebody like this to exist in a way that they impact the experience and the perception of the brand.
Exactly. I think if there is now a social network that comes up that has somebody at the helm that claims to use ethics much more, and I don't even want to use the word privacy, but just make sure that things are there for good and not for selling and or bad, then that one will win out right now. Everybody's sort of hoping for this to happen, but of course you can't make a company that has that many users or can compete with a company with that many users overnight.
I don't want to just look at it in terms of social network. I mean, both of you and I have been working for other companies. There's, I mean, several fintechs and healthcare companies that have also been looking at this from an ethical point of view around how to turn ethics into a maybe it's not a brand competency, but a competitive advantage that they want to be seen as the ethical answer, Yeah, in some of the case of fintechs that we work for, the ethical answer to other fintechs, which may not be trusted, right? Anybody who handles money is almost inherently untrustable, right? Any institution or company, and you have people who want to come out and say, we want to change that because we want to make it part of a strategy that brings people over to our application or platform or services, whatever that's going to be.
I like that. So if you're saying that any company that now wants to start using personal data or is using personal data and fulfills a trust function or has the trust of the users, they will need to think about this going forward because starting May 25th, 29, it'll become public what you're doing. And it'll better be public that you do it in a correct and good and healthy way for people versus in a way that might be a little bit shady. So I have the feeling that everybody will have to hit the reset button because people are becoming more aware of what is good and bad or what types of bad can happen if you don't take care of your things.
Summarizing, if you run or if you are a designer, if you run a design company, brush up on your ethics and privacy discussions.
Yeah, and I know that in design schools, ethics discussions are always a hot topic. I've just never really seen them when I started working until, let's say, the past 1.5 years in which we came into contact with companies where it did seem to be a topic, and it's fairly new. I wouldn't say that it didn't happen before. That's unfair to lots of companies and lots of design companies, but it's become more of a hot topic in places where you wouldn't per se expect it.